I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. When Keith walked into his doctor's office and complained of lightheadedness, he never imagined the drama waiting for him. Weighing more than 400 pounds and following a no-exercise, eat-whatever lifestyle, Keith discovered that he had suffered a heart attack and desperately needed open-heart surgery to save his life. The results of these traumatic events were numerous. Dramatic 200-pound weight loss without surgery, an entirely new way of eating, a commitment to exercise, an increased respect for his body, highly enlightening book, Outrunning My Shadow, Surviving Open-Heart Surgery and Battling Obesity, the decision to change my life. Page after page, readers are reminded of the importance of regular checkups, as well as healthy eating and sensible exercise. Many books about obesity and newfound health are written as admissions, warnings that either you follow the text or suffer the consequences. In his book, Keith has focused on only the positive, the guilt-free, you-can-do-it attitude that so many of us need when faced with drastic change. The essence of the author's message is simple. Get a checkup, move more today than you did yesterday, make a difference in your own well-being, and take control. Keith is uniquely qualified to speak to others and share his story. He's an accomplished public speaker and delivers a highly motivating and inspirational message to his audience. Keith has inspired so many people to take action to improve their own health and make positive changes in their own lives. He continues to make helping others his life goal. Keith, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Oh, thanks for having me, Lisa.
Yeah, your story is so inspiring, and I love your book, and I love the cover on your book, and people should go to your website, and you can tell us what that is.
The website is outrunningmyshadow.com.
Yes, and it's such a great cover, and it has you slender, I would say, in front of a larger picture of you when you were much, much heavier, and some gorgeous mountains in the background. And in the book, you know, I alluded to this in the introduction, but you write, quote, "This book is not just about a fat guy who got sick and lost a bunch of weight. It is much more. It's about a journey that we all hope to take in life that leads us to a better place." How did you get to where you were before you got to a better place? What was it like growing up for you, Keith?
For growing up, as far as the obesity and the overweight, from grades 3 through 9, Lisa, I was overweight, probably borderline obese as a child. And in ninth grade, I started to grow real fast. And I outgrew the obesity, outgrew the overweight. And in high school and also in college, I was pretty athletic. Played baseball, intramural sports, running from one side of campus to the other. And I didn't start putting on the weight until pretty much the day I graduated in 1985.
Okay. And what changed that happened?
As far as putting the weight back on?
Yes.
I started to lead a very sedentary lifestyle, mm-hmm. not moving. My activity pretty much stopped once I got out of college. The first job I had was, I ran the retail division for an office products company. And this division, we had a lot of retail stores which I was responsible for. So I was pretty much in my car going from store to store every day, sitting down with managers and going back and sitting at a desk, working 6 days a week, mega hours. It led to a very sedentary lifestyle. And when you're on the road like I was, it's an eat whatever, whenever, whatever you want lifestyle. All the wrong food groups, and just didn't realize the consequences that would be down the road 23 years later.
Well, how did you feel when you were doing it? I always wonder that people who eat a lot, if you're eating a lot of takeout and a lot of fast food, I guess if your body just gets used to it, or did you ever have days where you felt like, I'm not getting the right fuel, I'm having a hard time making it through the day, or were you just trudging through?
Well, pretty much trying to trudge through, but you have a very good point there. Your body does tell you you need certain things. When you're a real big guy, you just basically tell yourself, well, it's just because I'm big. If you feel lethargic or feel tired, well, it's just because I'm big or I'm real tired. You make excuses for yourself because you quickly lose remembering what it was like to have a little bit of athleticism, a little spring in your step.
Oh, that's a really good point. I think that happens to a lot of people. I know I've interviewed other people who, when they were really active in high school or college, even if they were larger guys, you know, they didn't gain as much weight. And then when the activity stopped and they get a desk job or a job where you're driving around, you're not as careful, then the weight can definitely come on. Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you did suffer a heart attack. And in the book, was it a quiet or a silent heart attack? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I suffered 3 years ago, almost to the date, what's called a remote silent heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
What a remote silent heart attack is, it's probably one of the most lethal types because you're not really sure what's happening. Many women have this. Many men have it. About 25% of the heart attack sufferers have what they call remote silent heart attack. You don't just clutch your chest, drop to your knees, go to the floor. Those heart attacks, as dangerous as they are, you know what's happening. But with a remote silent heart attack, the symptoms come on a little bit slower. They're not as quickly diagnosed, if you will, in a patient. Many women have remote silent heart attacks also, where they feel the pain in the arm, the shoulder. They feel like they're just stressed out. I was experiencing fatigue, shortness of breath, lightheadedness, dizziness, a little bit of nausea, all the common symptoms of what could be a heart attack. But when you're as big as I was, as out of shape as I was, well over 400 pounds, you just chalked it up to being really out of shape. So the symptoms were kind of ignored until the third time it happened in the period of a week. I had three episodes, and then I sought medical help. And then through the course of getting that help, it was discovered that I, in fact, did have a heart attack.
Wow. And wasn't it the first doctor who said that you shouldn't do open heart surgery until you lost weight, and then seven other doctors said, no, you shouldn't wait? Because I know you talk about seeing a total of eight.
Yeah. Well, actually, I saw more than eight doctors, but
okay.
I had eight total medical opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Heart attack in April of 07. It took until July 6 for me to actually have a heart catheterization, the angiogram, where they go through the leg and inject the dye in the heart. That is the most definitive test that somebody can do on you to tell you what type of blockage you have in your heart. The surgeon who came to the bedside that day told me, hey, great, you know, not great, but he said, you definitely need open heart surgery to save your life, but I can't do it right now. It can't be done in the immediate future. It's because of my weight. At the time of the angiogram, I had gotten my weight down through walking and a little bit of fitness and eating better foods down to about 380 pounds. And this doctor that day, who told me that I needed open heart surgery, told me I had to wait till I got down to 300 pounds. So I was faced with having to go back and tell my employer, my friends, my family, my loved ones, well, I have to have heart surgery, but I may not be able to have it for 6, 7, 8 months if I can lose the weight. He wanted me to get down to 300 pounds. But the eight medical opinions I had were just surgical and cardiology opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Seven of the other opinions said you need to have the surgery right now, that by waiting, the risk of death far outweighed the risk of dying on an operating table because of my weight.
Oh, okay, so then you obviously had it done. And what was the recovery like, and when were you able to start getting active and your attitude shifted?
It was tough. I already started to lose the weight. I made some decisions in May, actually, of 2007, before the heart attack was actually diagnosed, et cetera. I started watching what I was eating and started walking. I tried to get a little more fit. And so that journey had already started, if you
mm-hmm.
will. The heart surgery, I was down to 356 pounds the day of the surgery in August of 07. So I was already doing many of the right things. Started my lifestyle change, watching what foods I was eating, and also trying to get some physical activity in my life. My recovery was a little bit more difficult, probably, than most open-heart patients, in the fact that I still weighed a whole lot. So there was a lot of pressure on my chest still, trying to pull my chest apart, if you will, after the surgery. But it was a good 6, 7 weeks after that I started cardiac rehab, and that refocused and re-put me on a track to physical fitness. And I write about that, and when I talk to doctors or give a speech about that, I always mention the cardiac rehab people and what an important part they played in my recovery.
Oh, that's great. And you also write in the book, you really emphasize the importance of getting checkups, and if you can tell us about that. And you talk about a baseline, and if you can tell us what that is as well.
I'd be more than happy to. The most important thing, I give people 6, 7 things to do, what we talk about when I give presentations. Number one is always get a checkup. Remember, just because you're not sick doesn't mean you're healthy, Lisa. And there's so many people out there with undiagnosed diseases and that could be diagnosed with just getting a checkup. It would save so many more lives.
Mm-hmm.
And too many of these blood disorders and cancers, even heart problems, are not often diagnosed. Look at hypertension in the country. The hypertension rate is huge. Most people don't know they have high blood pressure. But going undiagnosed over a very long period of time causes such problems. the baseline numbers that I talk about are, know what your baseline is. At least you know what that is. If you have a baseline, I know that if I go to a doctor, well, here, let me put it this way. I advise everybody to go to see a doctor. And what I often hear throughout the country in Canada is people say, well, I really don't want to know what it is. I don't want to know if it's bad. And I tell those people, look, go to the doctor. If they tell you that your cholesterol is high and your blood pressure is high, that's great. If they tell you that your blood pressure and your cholesterol are perfect, that's great. And the reason I say that is because unless you know what it is, you will not know. I know that if somebody has high blood pressure, they can treat it.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody has very low good cholesterol, I can tell them, and a doctor can tell them, these are the steps you need to do to improve that number. So by knowing what's bad sometimes, you can actually treat it and move in the right direction to improve those numbers. So by knowing the baseline, besides that, if you know your baseline numbers now, your cholesterol numbers, blood pressure, diabetes number, your sugar levels, all those numbers, if you know what they are now, then 3 months down the road or 6 months, if you start taking proactive action now, you can compare them. What greater motivator is there than to see something progress?
Yeah, that's really motivating. And the other thing, too, is I think too many people wait until they've already had the crisis. And if you know your baseline and your numbers ahead of time, then you can do something about it, which is such an important message. Because for you, unfortunately, you had to go through the health crisis.
I went to hell and back.
Yes.
And I'm back. And I don't believe that people need to get there. You know, my aha moment was finding out that I had probably a problem with my heart and my acute awareness of my obesity. That's what got me startled. And it's kind of, I hate using the word, but people can relate to it. I hit rock bottom. There's a problem with that. And I tell people that they don't need to hit rock bottom to make changes in their life. Because the problem with hitting rock bottom, no matter what the problem is, you're too close to the edge. I was simply too close to the edge because one little slip, even the little misstep, I was dead. And I would have died a lot sooner than I wanted to. So by knowing where you're at and taking some proactive movements today, you can improve your life and health significantly.
Yeah. Now, what do you say to people who are listening and they just feel stuck, where they just feel like, I know what he's saying is true, but I just don't have the motivation. I just can't seem to get myself to make the changes. What are small little steps they can take?
I hear that every day. I get hundreds of emails.
I hear
it every day. One of the first thing you have to do is have a willingness to change. Most people that I've found actually have that willingness that they want to improve their health. If I ask anybody on the street, tall, skinny, heavy, short, it doesn't matter what race they are, would you like to improve your health and be healthier tomorrow than you are today? Lisa, they all say yes. All of your listeners will say yes.
Yes.
They all tell me yes. So if you're stuck and you're not sure exactly what to do, what I'd like you to do is figure out what is the smallest little change you can make in your life that you can commit to, that you can do for the next week. Just the smallest little thing. Is it simply walking out your front door and walking around your house one time per day? Is it walking down to the mailbox just one time per day? What's the smallest level of activity that you can do today that you didn't do yesterday that you can commit to and start to move? And most people can normally find that small commitment and start to make that little change. It could be just getting rid of the butter in the house, getting rid of the mayonnaise jar and starting to use mustard. So little steps. Look, I certainly didn't start out by saying, hey, I'm going to lose 200 pounds. I've lost about 208 pounds so far. I didn't say, well, you got to lose 200 pounds. I would have told somebody, forget you. I can't do that. Are you out of your mind? By thinking small and breaking it up small, things can certainly improve. So think of the smallest thing that can be improved upon your life, whatever it is that you can commit to, and try and stick with that. And that is certainly moving in the right direction. You know, there's so many excuses being thrown at us every day that we make for ourselves not to do something. There's no excuse for not taking care of yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not an option. The results of making the excuses are not good.
Well,
they're just not good. better health is what we need to do and what we need to focus on as a nation and certainly as an individual. You know, everybody's too worried about taking care of everybody else in their life. Turn the attention towards yourself just for once. For one time in your life, think about what you can do to improve your own life, and you'll be able to help so many more people than you ever possibly could have by not taking care of yourself.
Yeah, it's totally true. Well, Keith, I want to thank you so much, and I encourage everyone to get your wonderful book, Outrunning My Shadow, and check out your website, www.outrunningmyshadow.com.
Thank you so much.
You're so inspiring. You know, I mean, you have such a positive attitude, and you've done so much. And I just want to add, I always talk about this on all the shows I do on weight loss. There's plenty of thin people out there who aren't healthy, too. You know, there's people who I know who are heavy, who exercise and eat right, and there's people I know who are thin. This happen to be thin, but they live on Twinkies. So, you know, well, no matter what your size, you need to take good care of your health.
Without a doubt. It's been an absolute pleasure, Lisa. Keep up the good work in spreading the message of health and wellness, because that sometimes, at the end of the day, that's all we have.
Oh, it's true. Well, thank you so much. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. Everyone have a great week. Keep being healthy. Bye-bye.